Rucker Alcoholic. He reminded me that he introduced me as a not so nice term one time, but I'm not going to do that to him. But I'd forgotten about that, but thanks for reminding me that. Our speaker tonight, when I first met him, I was one of my first days in his program, and I was confused and lonely and all sorts of stuff. And I saw him, met him, talked to him, and I wanted what he had. He proceeded to help me through the steps in this program and got me out of my head, put my hand in the hand of God, and I'm truly grateful for him for doing that. And I'll introduce our speaker tonight is Mark L.
Hi, everybody. My name is Mark, and I am an alcoholic. It's only by the grace of God I'm here tonight. And thank you, Yet Group, for asking me to tell my story. I was told when I first entered the program that if a group was to ask you to tell your story, you do everything you can to accommodate that group. And if you're not able to do it that evening, try to give them another time. Well, Dylan and Stephanie basically ran out of people, so I was the one that was left. So, my sobriety date is February 4th, 2015. Thank you, God. And, you know, since then, still ups and downs. There's still life on life terms, but for the most part, it has been absolutely awesome. You know, my home group is the 805 in Old Hickory, which we like to call the effed up 805 in Old Hickory, and the members know where the alcohol mind is still there, and also the insanity, so I fit right in with them. You know, I've always wanted to tell my story here. This is kind of where it started for me. I grew up off of McGavick Pike. Actually, we lived off Murfreesboro Road, but the lady that kept me lived off McGavick Pike, and I ended up going to Stanford Elementary. So this was kind of my area. We used to ride our bicycles back behind here, and I had a couple of buddies go to Holy Rosary, and we'd always kind of hang out after school and everything. Very early on, I felt uncomfortable in the classroom. I had a tough time, especially test taking, stuff like that. I couldn't bring it back, and even though I was studying and learning it, but it was always good enough maybe to go to the next grade, but sometimes barely. And coming from a mom that went in, she was grew up in Charleston County past Gallatin. She started as a cashier with the Department of Revenue. She retired as the Director of Accounting for the state of Tennessee. Dad was an engineer, started a little retail store in its heyday, was doing about $250,000 of sales a week. Had a brother that won every type of math and science award at McGavick and went on and did really well in college. And then basically there was me, kind of the outcast, the one that has the hard time and making. I was a good C student. That's about all you're going to get out of me. Then later on I learned that, I started studying and kind of slowing it down, and the comprehension eventually came. But through elementary, you know, had all my buddies after school. We'd play a little baseball, throw the football, all that good stuff. And middle school, I was introduced to soccer. Enjoyed it because also I had an older brother that played, and decent. And also I was able to get on to some select teams and traveling teams. And at an early age, even ninth and 10th grade, actually, I had a college coach ask me if I'd be interested in playing for a local school here, or university here in town. And my whole mindset, I knew I was going to eventually come back and work for my father, but I wanted to get out of Nashville or even Tennessee to go to school. Freshman year of high school, 15, was the first time I ever take a drink about finished about half of it. My buddy said, "How is that?" I said, "It's good." But the second one, that's where it was. I had found it. That's what I was looking for. And these guys, the older guys I was hanging out with, and I was accepted by an older crowd. And that's also about the time that my brother and I were going to go on a trip. And he said, "I think you need an ID to show that you're 21. I said, "I bet your ass I do." So he said, "Here's my 21-year-old ID, and give me $20, and I'll buy." That's the best $20 I thought I'd ever spent in my life. But the next five years, I got turned down two times, and both of them said, "You're not Jeff. We know Jeff." So, but what that did, that automatically got me into even the freshman or sophomore, got me in with the older crowd because I was able to buy the booze for everybody. We moved to Old Hickory, close to Old Hickory Lake, in about the late 70s, right along the lake. And a buddy of mine that lived down the street, he's the one that kind of introduced me to a couple things. But his mom was she invented this chemical that was a multi-purpose cleaner. She'd go out of town on Sunday nights, wouldn't come back till Friday, and we would help her make it and then ship it to wherever she was in the southeast. So we had this huge house on the lake. Ski boats, cabin cruisers, jet skis, Jennifer knows. And so we would make this product and she would pay us for it. And then basically that was our spending money. And she actually said, "Oh, here's y'all's beer money." So the first time that I really ever got in trouble with alcohol, me and some buddies thought it'd be a really good idea to drink a fifth of bourbon and maybe go see another friend at another high school. God, what could fucking go wrong, huh? So we did that, and all of a sudden, man, they just, teacher said, "You don't belong here." How did they know, man? What in the world is going on here? But one of the guys I was with, a teacher grabbed him by the arm, and he kind of knee-jerk reaction, he popped that teacher right in the jaw. And I'm like, shit, we're in all kinds of trouble now. They had called the police, and police came and got us, took us to Sumner County Jail, and I was suspended 2 weeks out of school, and basically was failing my sophomore year, and had a couple teachers able to make up some tests, but most of them were like, "No, you can't make up anything if you're out of school, suspension." What turned out in that 2 weeks, we found out that the teacher that got hit is my mom's first cousin. So talking about on a shit list, man. So mom and dad are basically done with me. My daughter's going, "What in the hell?" So mom and dad were basically done with me for a little while, and they shipped me off to the family farm up in Trousdale County. We did have to go to court over this, and the judge said, "Do not step foot in Sumner County again." And so we're, yes, sir, absolutely. Come back to school. Really just, I got more involved with the sports and pretty much stayed in there. And, you know, I still got in trouble. And occasionally then mom and dad smelled a little alcohol in my breath. But when I did come back, we did go to a counselor, and they said it would probably be best if he goes to drug and alcohol treatment center. And desperately said, "Mom and Dad, no, I'm not going to do that anymore." And, you know, maybe it would have been a good idea. Maybe it wasn't. I wasn't ready at damn 16 or 17-year-old. I had a lot more drinking and drugging to do. But the alcohol, when I understood at an early age that when I took that first drink, I had a really hard time to stop. You know, drugs are a part of my story, too. And I heard a young lady up here one time said, if you got a problem with the drugs, call your sponsor. If you don't have a sponsor, you got a whole lot more problems than I do. So I always thought about that. But I was introduced to cocaine at an early age. And, you know, I drink at five or six beers and that drunk feeling and do a little bit of that. And then, man, I'm the life of the party, baby. I am in there. I'm ready to go. I can keep going and going. And that was kind of our weekend ritual. We'd kind of divvy up our money, and we'd get us a little bit of powder and get us some alcohol, and we're off and running. Make it through high school barely. I got in trouble again, had to do 150 hours of community service before they would let me graduate. But I had a scholarship offer at another school in Kentucky for sports, and I was able to go up there 2 weeks before school started, and this was a private Methodist school, and they said, we're going to test you for any type of drugs or anything, and we have every right to. We're a private school, and we don't have to go by any other type of public schools or anything. We can drug test you anytime we want, and they scared me. And I was like, man, I really don't want to go to work right now. So the alcohol, yeah, it was there. But mainly found out that this is the time that I found out that I really wasn't that good at soccer compared to these other guys. I was good about driving the bus for them and everything. But I still had a little bit of talent. But what I did have, I was able to run 5Ks in around 18 minutes. So I had a lot of endurance, and that's what the coach wanted. He wanted me running up and down that field. But I was probably number 16 or 17 on the list, but that gave it to the travel list. And it was one of those that either we were losing by a lot or we were winning by a lot if I ever got any playing time. So I didn't get much playing time, but I did go on a lot of the road trips. They did have an opening for walk-ons for the golf team, and I did walk on to the golf team also. So I was able to play fall soccer and then spring golf for them. And that was awesome. There was just five of us. We go to all the different tournaments and everything. And the lady or the girl that I was seeing, she said I'm pregnant my freshman year of college. And I'm like, oh, my God, my life is ended. What am I going to do? And, you know, we stayed in there. We didn't get along that well. But as Detox Bill, we didn't know what else to do, but we got married. So I'll never forget that one. So, then I've got me a little girl. So we got us a house right off campus. And never forget, there were some stables right next to us. And Autumn would sit at the front door, oh, Daddy, please take me to look at the pony horses. Please take me to look at the pony horses. So we go look at the pony horses, and I'd stroll her around. And no, we'd go out occasionally, me and the wife, and the coach of the soccer team would watch her or something. He'd stroll her around campus while we were out doing things. So it was a very community-type school. Not long after, went to a party at Lake Cumberland State Park, driving home, got in a little trouble. Got me a DUI, and tried every way to get out of it and was unable to get out of it. Not much longer, I got another one. But they got it reduced down to reckless driving. I was like, God, two DUIs back to back. And that's when I was first introduced to the program, that the judge thought it would be a good idea if I go and get this paper signed for 30 days during the summer months after I'd come home. And, you know, y'all didn't have anything I wanted. Y'all were laughing, and I'm like, this is serious shit. I just got in some trouble, and I really didn't want any part of it. And once again, the consequences were not that strong for me to really accept this program. So, of course, I had some more drinking and drugging to do. Made it through school the last 2 years. I started doing some studying and wanted to get out and finished up with A's and B's, graduated a little bit over a 3.2. So from the dummy I thought I was to actually, for every class, 1 hour of class, basically to putting in about a 1 hour of study time. And so we're done with that. We're moved back to Nashville and moved into a little duplex off of Turner, and that's DuPont Middle School now, in a little duplex. And sitting on the front porch after being there about a month, and I've got Autumn in my lap, and I see this red dot right on my chest. And I'm like, oh, my God, what is that? And some guy, not even probably three or four houses down, he's got a scope right on me. And she's in my lap. So I'm like, what the fuck is going on here? A week later, two houses down, a guy, they raided the whole block, and he was on America's Most Wanted. I said, I'm out of here. So we were able, with the parents' help, to get us a little house over in Old Hickory, right along Hermitage Golf Course, on the Lakewood side, the low-rent district, not the high-rent district. So, but it didn't take long, so I'm back at back in Nashville, and I'm working with my father, and he's got this business, and we had had two or three really cold winters, and his business had really taken off. And so I graduate college on a Saturday. I go to work for him on a Monday, and he said, okay, pick a day, Tuesday or Thursday. He said, I'm not doing these live TV commercials both days. You pick one, and you do those live commercials. I'm like, please don't make me do these live freaking commercials. Okay, I'll pick Thursday morning. And so I did the live commercials, and then it turned out that I did majority of their marketing and did most of their marketing and TV commercials for about 20 years. But one thing he said to me, he said, Mark, we work hard and we play hard. He said, if you call in sick, your ass better be in the hospital. And I was like, boy, and I took that to heart, because he's a little guy, but he's the chief. And that's what he was noted for. That right, Ellis? Ellis worked for Dad for a little while, but he demanded respect, and boy, those employees gave him the respect. But he was fair. He was fair, but he was a businessman. He could sit in front of these stock pages with all these margins, making sure he's got to make this specific margin to keep the lights on, to keep everybody paid, and the utilities, all this good stuff, and that was his thing. He said, I don't have a choice. I can't fail. I've got to make this work. So that work ethic right there, I really admired, and I did. We're living in our little house and everything, and I did. I played hard, but I didn't miss work. That's just one thing I didn't screw with. There's a couple times that I came in there, and he looked at me, well, I appreciate the incentive of trying to make it, but if you want to go to your office and take a nap, go ahead. I was like, nope, it's time to work. But not much longer, wife gets pregnant, and not much longer than that, I've got me a son. It's like, wow, this is awesome. I've got me a son. Not much longer than that, I've got me another little daughter. I'm 26, 27. I'm like, man, what's going on? I can't stand this freaking lady, and we're not having relations. And it turned out those last two kids were not mine. So basically, I got an attorney, and I said, I want my daughter, and I want the house, and that's it. And the judge gave her 30 days to get out of the house with those two kids. Don't get me wrong. Nothing against those two kids. Still love them to death. And that's my daughter's brother and sister, no matter what. But that's when my alcohol and drug abuse, instead of me doing what I was supposed to, going to get the counseling that I needed, that's when I really got deep into the drugs and alcohol. And that's approximately about the time that Mom was retiring, and she had a lot of free time. And I did. I pawned my daughter off to my mom as much as I could. And they were like, oh, he's just blowing off a little steam. Look kind of what happened to him. He's just let him be right now and just let him do his thing. And, yeah, I was doing my thing. I was staying up 2 and 3 days in a row and drinking and drugging just my butt off. You know, I went through this for probably about a couple years, and my daughter really started living with my mom, and I had pretty much the free time that I wanted after work, and I didn't have to worry about anybody else, basically. This is a time when I had a buddy move in with me, and he owned a bar in Mount Juliet, and I did not charge him rent, and he did not charge me for beer. So we worked out a pretty good situation there. And Wednesday nights, we'd have a little pool tournament, and then we'd close down the bar, keep the people that we wanted to stay in the bar, kicked out the rest of them. But I had those commercials I had to do on Thursday morning. So a lot of times I'd leave that bar and just a change of clothes or something, and I'd go and do those live TV commercials, and still drunk and high and drunk. I mean, basically I'd get up there and I'd give my 30 seconds or whatever, and I'm like, man, wonder if anybody noticed how messed up I was. And my dad always told me, he said, son, the more you mess up, the more they remember. And I was like, hell yeah, they do. So, you know, this went on for a while, and then I had talked to a lady that was moving back to that was moving to Nashville. She was a friend that was in college, and we started dating, and then eventually we got married. And it was over about a 2 or 3 year process, and then it took a little while, about a year, and then I have a son, and I'm like, great. Well, that son now today he's 15. He's got an uncle that died on her side of drug addiction. He's got an uncle on the other side that died of alcoholism. He's got mental illness on both sides. I'm saving a seat for him. Hopefully, it'll skip a year or two, the genes and everything. Hopefully, it'll skip it. Don't know. We'll see what happens. And we did have a little talk not too long ago that, what I found out, that phenomenon of the craving is once I started, man, I couldn't stop. And I really couldn't stop. So we've got our family. We're staying in the same little house and doing the work thing. And she's also working. And my addiction and alcoholism kept getting worse and worse. And I left them absolutely no choice. And she said, I'm done with you. I'm leaving. And son's going with me. We're moving back to Kentucky. And I was able to buy her part out of the house, and it wasn't much longer than that. But in my mind, I was like, boy, I've got what I want again. I can drink and drug as much as I want without anybody bothering me. And boy, did I. After about 2 weeks, oh, my God, where's my family? Oh, shit. And, you know, it that one really put me over the edge that I'd went to my parents on a Sunday morning after running pretty hard all weekend. I told them, I said, I'm in bad shape. I need help. I said, I need to go to treatment. This is kind of what I'm doing. And they said, sure, we'll help you any way we can. And I'm right now about 180. I was about 50 pounds lighter when I did go into treatment. It was just all alcohol and drugs and no food. So did the treatment. I lasted, I lasted about 18 months and never was still really wanting to work the program. It was more or less, it was just coming to the meetings and thinking I could just get this just by going to the meetings. And I don't know, over a period of 18 months, I went through 5 or 6 sponsors. Well, they never did really tell me what I wanted to hear. And they wanted me to work these steps. And I don't know if I really need that. Maybe I just need to go to these meetings. Maybe I'll be fine. And y'all know how that works out. So after that 18 months, I had got back in the, after going to treatment, and after that 18 months, the house was a wreck. I got back in the house. I was staying over at my parents', but I was going back in and fixing it up and everything. And a buddy of mine came over and he put a 12-pack down on the kitchen table. And there was nothing in between me and that next drink. See, what we do, we come to these meetings, we call our sponsor, we read the literature, we pray, we meditate, we get all this stuff built up, but really there was nothing left in between me and that next drink. And it just, by the time that I finished about 3 or 4 beers, I was calling to get some powder. By the end of that night, I was in a crack house. Just like that, 24 hours later, I'm spending everything I've got in my pocket. And, you know, that went on for a while. The company had let me go, the family business, and I thought for sure there's no way they're going to let me go. Boy, they did. And they wanted their company vehicle back too. So I was in pretty bad shape. And wasn't much longer that I thought it'd be a good idea that maybe I need to go back to treatment. And this time, as Larry Barnes says, the pain of the pain was greater than the pain of the change. I did not care. Who knew anything? I was ready. And I'd actually, at that time, I was living in a house that was foreclosed on, the utilities cut off, and I was going to neighbors at midnight, opening up their faucet and getting water out where I wouldn't dehydrate. Still had money in my pocket, but the only reason why, because I was a lying, cheating thief, and I'd do everything I could to get in your pocket to get what I needed. And this is about the time that my life was around $4. $4 is what I need in the morning. And that was $3.65 plus tax would get me a pint of vodka. I didn't know what was worse, having just that one pint of vodka or not having it. And because, you know, that one pint, that three swigs, that's gone. But it'd keep me from getting sick. And so there's certain things that we read in the book that really just say, hey, that's us. And I'm going to share one thing with you here. When I was in treatment that last time, right before I dropped to my knees and I said, help me, God, help me, help me. And I just, help me. And I did. I felt this sense, overwarm sense of euphoria that everything was going to be okay. And before, I didn't. Nothing was okay. Everything was pain and misery in my life. And we were having trouble with personal relationships. We couldn't control our emotional natures. We were a prey to misery and depression. We couldn't make a living. We had a feeling of uselessness. We were full of fear. We were unhappy. We couldn't seem to be of real help to other people. In my mind, I was a worthless father, a worthless son, a worthless employee. There's nothing left I could offer y'all. There's nothing. So my conclusion was that I either get help or I'm going to end it. That's how bad it hurts. Suicide is the long-term solution to a short-term problem. Boy, it is, isn't it? Man. So here we go. I'm out of treatment at 10 o'clock on a Wednesday morning. I go to the noon shade tree meeting. And I said, raised my hand. I stood up. I said, my name's Mark, and I'm an alcoholic, and I just got out of treatment. I need help. And I said, I need a sponsor. And afterwards, I heard this guy that I was like, man, I really like what he said. And I went up to him, and this was a gentleman named Tim. And I said, Tim, would you be my sponsor? He's like, man, I've only got about 4 months in the program. And I was like, dude, I want you to be my sponsor. And he called his sponsor. Yeah, y'all can do it together. I said, okay. But so we go, really, we did together, but I'd kind of told him the off and on, the 15 years of in and out of the program. He's like, well, what we're going to do, we're going to get in these steps and we're going to work them. And I said, absolutely. I'm willing to do anything. And from that day that I got out of treatment, this has been my prayer every morning. This is something I read in Bill's story. There I humbly offer myself to thee as I then understood you, to do with me as you will. I place myself unreservedly, no reservations, under your care and direction. I admitted for the first time that I myself, I was nothing without him. I was lost. I ruthlessly faced my sins and became willing to have my newfound friend. Well, we know who friend is. I think he's just trying to not get on the agnostics or atheists and everything there. So take away root and branch. I have not had a drink since. And that's one of my morning prayers that I say. And part of that is also please remove me of bondage of self. Because self-will is my problem, and fear, not knowing exactly the outcome of something that's going to happen, and I'm full of fear, because I've got all this anxiety, something that's going to happen next week. And I'm like, shit, man, you got to stay in here. You got to stay in here. So I was so unemployable at the time. I was living with a girlfriend. She would take me to meetings. My sponsor would pick me up. My grand sponsor would take me here, there. I was doing 2 and 3 meetings a day. And I think God had a plan for me. Right at about a little bit over 90-something days, I get a call from a detective in Franklin. He said, I'm sorry, but your brother has passed. And I was like, shit, man. So the first thing I did was call my sponsor, because I didn't know anything else to do. But the last thing I wanted to do is take a drink or drug. How much worse could I make a situation by picking up a drink or drug? Who could I benefit? Anybody? How could I help my parents make some of these decisions? So I was borrowing a vehicle from my sponsor, because he had a company vehicle. And he said, okay, come over and pick me up. And so we went to Franklin, and he said, well, tell me about your brother. I was like, well, yeah, we kind of drank about the same way and everything. And he's like, no, man, tell me about your brother. I was like, man, he was a freaking class act, man. I mean, he was my role model. Absolutely amazing chef, up for all these James Beard Awards, and represented the Titans in the Super Bowl as their chef. Just all this crazy stuff, man. The whole time, what it was just remembering my brother as who he was, not the alcoholic he was. And that was the way that the detective said, okay, I want you to come in and ID the body. And I was able to do that. But also, I was able to go in there and clean up some stuff that my mom and dad and sister-in-law didn't need to see. But I was actually benefiting someone else besides myself, because it was before, it was all about Mark. Screw y'all. It's what about me? It's the lying, cheating thief. I helped kind of clean up a little bit, and the detective said, no, there wasn't any force entry. It was locked from the inside, and I went in, and, man, there were beer cans everywhere. I was like, damn, my brother's a vodka drinker. What in the hell? 6 weeks earlier, he had been on a ventilator, and because his organs were shutting down and his body couldn't process the alcohol anymore. So that vodka scared his ass. And that's what all those beer cans were in there, that he had switched from vodka to beer. But, well, we know how that goes. And so I'm taking him out of the hospital at Southern Hills, and the doctor stopped us, and he said, if you go on another binge like that, more than likely it'll kill you. And damn it if it didn't kill him. So I'm done with all that. I'm back at Old Hickory, and we're getting ready for the funeral. And I'm like, I was talking to my sponsor. I was like, man, I don't have a suit. I don't have any clothes. And I pretty much lost all of my stuff and my daughter's stuff when the house was foreclosed on. And he handed me his debit card, and he said, go buy you a suit. We'll work it off later. Don't worry about that right now. And I was like, are you sure? And he's like, yeah. He said, I know you. I know who you are now. And so went and got me a suit, and actually returned his credit card to him. So, I suited up and showed up. I took care of business, and got to meet but I hadn't been in that program 100 days, but the funeral home was just packed of people that were in the program. And my love for all of y'all to come and showing the respect and everything. And y'all, that was it. Y'all were my people. This is exactly where I needed to be. And but later on, about a month later, and my sponsor had a little house on right next to Old Hickory Marina on the lake. And he said, okay, I've got a way that you can work off your debt. I'm like, oh, shit. Yeah. And so I pull up in his vehicle, and he's got a pressure washer there. He said, I want you to pressure wash the driveway, the garage, and around this way. And if he had said pressure wash the inside of that fucking house, I'd have done it. I promise you. I wanted to do anything I could to repay that debt, because I owed him that debt, anything. And, that's where the willingness is, right? If we're willing, we become teachable. And so I moved out of my girlfriend's house and still working through the steps. And I asked Mom and Dad, I said, Mom, can I come live with y'all for a little while? And they said yes. So staying with Mom and Dad. And, you know, what I was able to do is kindle that relationship with my parents and with my daughter and also my son and also my friends and everything. Because there was a point, I went about a year and a half, almost 2 years, that I didn't speak to none of them. That it was about all about me and how much can I find a bottom. And but one thing I did like about that sponsor, he never, the suggestions, yes. But I remember one of the first things he said, he said, Mark, suggestions are like you're up in an airplane and for some reason you got to jump out of that thing. You got a parachute on your back. It's a really good suggestion. You pull that cord when you come down out of that plane. And I was like, okay, so that's what that means. Okay, those are the suggestions I need. But he said, we're reading through there. I'd go over to his house about 5:30 in the morning and watch the sun come up over the lake, and very spiritual for me there. And so we're reading through there, and we're going along how it works, and it says, remember that we deal with alcohol, cunning, baffling, and powerful. And he said, Mark, what's the most important word there? I was like, man, it's cunning. God, it's so freaking cunning. Baffling, bewildered, dumbfounded. Hell yeah, it's baffling. Powerful. Oh, God, yeah. King alcohol? Yes. He said, no, Mark. He said, you've got to remember that it's all those things. It's all the cunning, baffling, and powerful. You've got to remember. If you don't do that, you're going to screw up the rest. See, like your brother, you can see the mountains in front of you, but there's those little molehills. Those are the ones you got to watch out for when it sneaks up on you. So I had the girlfriend's in August when I just got finished mowing the yard, and the neighbor finished, and he comes over talking to me, and we're right there, and he opens up a cooler, and I don't know, I had maybe a year in the program. And he pulls out a 16-ounce beer and the little ice chips on it and the little sexiest thing I'd ever seen. Oh, my. You know, honestly, alcohol was like a relationship to me. And we talked about this last night, that I had lost somebody, and that's what I had lost, that alcohol. And I was like, maybe tomorrow. No, it's cunning, baffling, power. And I was like, no, I can't take a drink. But in my mind, I was already reaching for that, and it was so sexy. And I just said, no. But that's it, that cunning, baffling, powerful. Boy, it'll sneak up on you if you're not careful. After I was sober for a little while, I had a gentleman ask me to sponsor him. I was 3 or 4 months. In about 6 months, I had another guy ask me to sponsor him. And then I had about 3 or 4 more ask me to sponsor him within that first year. And I'm like, what in the hell? And the sponsor, well, evidently they like something that you have. And I'm like, I don't know what I have. But I'm willing to go to the meetings and share and get there early and make the coffee. And because, man, I didn't want the other. God, I knew the other. The other was sick. I was hurting. My health was in pretty bad shape. And that was another reason that I'd went in treatment, that I thought for sure it was an esophageal hemorrhage. I was throwing up blood and passing blood. And I was like, oh, my God, man, it's just a matter of time before I bleed out. But it wasn't that, thank God. How, H, honest that I am an alcoholic. O, open-minded that there is a solution beyond my control. W, willing, becoming teachable, willing to do anything to stay sober. We few, we proud few, we merry band of brothers. That's how we do it. We stay together. We keep coming back. I'm still terrible at relationships. Absolutely terrible. I finally found out what the problem was. It's me. Problem's me. In my mind, I think I can change you. and you're going to be so much better off if you just listen to what us know. And we know how that works. You know, these last 4 to 6 weeks, I had a tough time. I was full of fear, the anxiety, and ending in a relationship. And unfortunately, it did. It went to several court appearances, and you know, stuff happens. But now, boy, after that ended, I look back, and I was like, well, it really wasn't that big a deal. It's just you went up there, you told the truth like you were supposed to, and just you keep on about your business. So things keep getting better in my life. I'm back to working with the same company that had fired me twice before. And I think this was my father's kind of last thing that for the new owner to, which he only tried to give me that business twice, and I just couldn't do it. But that's okay. Those things happen. But I've got a job that I'm not managing anybody. I'm in an outside sales. I can basically go anywhere I want. I give them an idea on Monday morning where I'm headed to. I don't know. This past week I was Alabama, Birmingham, Montgomery, stay, play a little golf, pick up some Alabama peaches, come home. Before that, did the Georgia trip up East Tennessee, Virginia, and just basically go wherever I want to. Okay, here's your company vehicle, but also this is your personal vehicle. Here's your company credit card. Here's your gas card. Now, once you leave Davidson County, everything that you purchase, well, we pay for. I'm like, Mark, don't screw this up. Do your job. First year, sales were up about 15 to 20%. Next year, 15%. Next year, 15%. So we're up 50% on about, so basically went up from about $2 million up to about $3.5 million. So the big boss says, keep doing what you're doing. Keep going further. Keep going further. But I do enjoy my job. And so I do my work. I find me a hotel. I get me a bite to eat. And I find me a meeting. That meeting app on our phone, the little app, man, it's awesome. Shows exactly which meeting's close to, whether it be at a clubhouse or a church or. And I take a lot of pride in that. I did do the Arkansas trip 2 weeks ago. I got to go to the Wolf Street meeting. That's the Joe and Charlie meetings there in Little Rock. I got to go to one of those. And you know, things keep getting better. Unfortunately, my sponsor did decide that he wanted to go back out. So I got me a new sponsor, and he's got several years in the program. And also, he's got a sponsor, and his sponsor has a sponsor. So I wanted to clarify that. So. But, you know, life's good. Got me a little place over in Old Hickory now, a little townhome. And, man, I'm around the things I love, my family, the lake, and my golf course. So, and I'll end with this. When God heals and restores, He just doesn't bring you back to your original condition. He brings you out better than you were before. God's grace is bigger than any challenge, mistake, or setback. He is a God who makes all things new. No matter what you have been through or what you are facing, it's still not too late. God can bring healing and complete restoration to every area of your life. I'm still learning from my brother. Thank you.